Tracked a raccoon one time in the snow. I was in a neighborhood, and I was just curious where this raccoon lived, you know.
Time now for...
I hope there's Bigfoot. I don't think there is. The reason I don't think there is, because we found bones of dinosaurs and everything else, but we haven't found bones that I've heard of Bigfoot.
Overreaction Monday!
On Earth, they say, oh, well, we're the only ones. Really? Why? Have you been to the other planets? Have you checked out the other planets?
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Week 4 in the books, and we are overreacting Monday to this. Finally felt like a real almost college football season, I thought. There was that moment late Saturday afternoon. Texas is coming back on Texas Tech. LSU's about to fall down dead to Mississippi State. Balls are getting chucked in the air. Oklahoma's already down. There was things happening. You were clicking back and forth. Real names that you heard of. Consequential games and not just in the Sun Belt standings. Good stuff, I thought.
Great stuff.
You still don't have that volume. It's still just not that volume, because then it kind of petered out pretty quick at night. Miami trashing Florida State, and the Alabama-Missouri game was not close, although Nick Saban did his best to make it close, and I'm not too happy with you, Coach Saban. Backdoor cover.
Gritty cover by the Missouri Tigers. Gritty.
Yeah. Drinkwitz knows he's not going to win a lot of games, so at least he'll win the gamblers over in year one.
And, you know, Saban's like, I think he said after, Bryce Young needed to get a little playing time. I think it will help his learning curve. Well, it didn't help my damn race for the case, buddy.
Nad might still be leading at this point.
Yeah, I'm not sure he is. I went 2-3 and one, so that wasn't good. And that was my winner. I mean, how do you – 2 TDs late. It was bad. Anyway, that's where we're at. I'll start with LSU. I think that's the big one. Mississippi State at LSU, defending national champs, you know, just straight up beaten, 60 minutes, Mississippi State. I watched almost all that game. The Pirate and the air raid came in. It was unstoppable. Orgeron, they couldn't stop it. They threw for, 623 yards, set all sorts of SEC rec day one. I'm going to chuck up 623 on you. Everyone's like, this is the first national champ to lose at home. That's because they don't play anybody. This is why you play your bye game, right? You're a little rusty, different things going on. But I did not think LSU looked great. And I thought Mississippi State did. Pat, thoughts?
Unbelievable. I mean, it was a great day everywhere, but that was absolutely the headliner. You could not, if you are an air raid disciple, you could not have scripted it any better than that. For not only for Mike Leach to come into the league, to not have a full spring practice, they're bringing in a quarterback from the West Coast. Everything seems to be lining up that, like, this is going to be a long rebuild. 2020, scratch it. You know, Mississippi State is not going to be able to perform the way a customary Mike Leach team would. And then they drop 623 passing yards in Death Valley against the defending national champions. And I know this LSU team is a rusted out hulk of what it was last year, but still, that is the defending national champions. And not only to do that, but to win running for 9 yards. When's the last time anybody has ever beaten LSU running for 9 yards or won an SEC game running for 9 yards? It's like
beating anybody.
I mean, it is like the like, if you're going to just draw it up on the Hal Mummy, Mike Leach fever dream, this is how you do it. You walk into the SEC, the big bad, you got to win the line of scrimmage league, and you just throw it all over the yard and beat the defending champions. Unbelievable.
So I did a little bit of research last night, which, as my colleagues and former colleagues, you know, is rare. I thought this stat was fascinating. So Leach threw the ball all over the yard, right? Threw the ball 60 times in Death Valley. So they ran 76 plays. They threw it 60 times. Compared to last year, that was actually below average for Mike Leach. That was 77% of the time. Last year, he threw through the entire season 78% of the time. which is just amazing to me that what you saw yesterday compared to last season would have been considered below normal. The thing that struck me, and there are a few things. LSU had Derek Stingley out. Derek Stingley is one of the five best players in the country. Would he have made a difference in the game? I don't know. Worth noting. That said, I thought LSU just did nothing to adjust. Like, Leach was pretty much mocking Orgeron in the postgame, being like, well, they kept playing their corners really close pressed up, so we kept calling passes over their heads. That was pretty much what he said, which was a little bit, to me, a little bit of like, well, they never adjusted, so we just kept doing the same thing over and over and over. And even Coach O said it at halftime, and Gary Danielson referenced it a few times in the half, like they weren't winning one-on-one matchups, which is true. They weren't winning one-on-one matchups. But at a certain point, you may want to adjust how you're playing defense, Bo Pelini, in order to actually stop this embarrassing onslaught. They did not only break the SEC record for passing, they broke it by 70-something yards. And the fact that it was Eric Zier against Southern Miss, like, because that's just like another name from another time. Like, Eric Zier was not around during eras of bubble screens and spread offenses and all that kind of stuff. Like, Pat probably covered Eric Zier because he's laughing right now.
Oh, I did. Absolutely.
I did not cover Eric Zier, but it was fun to see his name. And, like, to think about what Joe Burrow and LSU did last year was one of the most dominant things, dominant seasons, dominant performances, the single most dominant quarterback season we've seen in college football history. I wrote it that night in New Orleans at the title game, and I fully believe it. Like, we've seen nothing like it. So now, I really think for LSU, it's fascinating, right? You have Orgeron. Remember, it was about 3 years ago this week they lost to Troy. Troy stuffed it down their throat. People didn't think they were – LSU was tough. Like, LSU was on the ropes. And then everything just completely changed, like totally and completely changed. And Orgeron became the toast of college football. In fact, I'm holding here to help cross-promote our friend Bruce Feldman, his book about Orgeron, which came in the mail days before, Flip the Script. And I couldn't help but chuckle looking at the book, because very quickly after 60 Minutes and after his book release and after Orgeron was the toast of sporting America, like, the script changed pretty fast, you know? And the genius of Nick Saban that we've talked about many times on this podcast is he's one with, like, the coaches haven't mattered, right? Like, isn't like a coordinator chucks him, gets another. Dan Enos, you're gone. You know what I mean? Like, the cast and ensemble of coaches are disposable parts. Somebody gets a job, great. We're shoving one of our, you know, it was funny. They missed Charles Kelly, their assistant coach, their safeties coach, didn't make it to the game yesterday for undisclosed reasons. Who took his place? Some 23-year-old, no, it's Mike Stoops, who was like the Oklahoma defensive coordinator, who was like a fairly successful coach at Arizona for a period of time until he wasn't. But anyway, it wasn't like they had like some, you know, some young rube, you know, 24-year-old who hasn't shaved. No, they had Mike Stoops coaching on the headsets yesterday. Saban has built a machine. What Orgeron has done was he built a program to a great moment. Now it will be interesting because you obviously – it's the 10-game SEC season is going to be relentless on everyone, right? If you are Vanderbilt, which played well yesterday, if you are Missouri, if you are South Carolina Transit, like you are just praying you don't go 1-9, 2-10, right? But it's going to be really easy for one of the supposed blue bloods with no home field advantage of any discernible kind. I didn't feel the crowd impact that game at all yesterday. Like – you're basically playing 10 neutral site games. And if you're playing 10 neutral site games, there's a lot more coin flips. And I mean, I just really think like a lot of teams in the SEC woke up and they're like, you know, like Lane Kiffin could go 1-9. They flashed on offense and it was great, but they couldn't stop anything yesterday. I mean, they couldn't tackle. I really think like I haven't taken like a long enough time to like really think through what a 10-game SEC season could mean. Because all of a sudden, like, I mean, that LSU team, like, they couldn't stop anybody. And maybe I'm being a little bit too gloom and doom, and you guys can disagree with me, but boy, like, the corners, they nickel straight transfer, like, the corners they trotted out there couldn't slow anyone down.
Well, let me run through their schedule, because we're going to overreact, right? So if LSU is what it was yesterday, so they got Vanderbilt, and they have Missouri. I think they could win those two games. I'm going to give them those two, right? 2-1. Then they play at Florida. I would say no, 2-2. If we're going to just go off of one game, There's South Carolina's next, 3-2. They play Auburn. Nope. Could see them losing that. Could see them obviously losing Alabama. All of a sudden, you're 3-4. And you're going to play Arkansas, who actually looked decent for a while yesterday. I think they'd beat Arkansas. That'll get them to 4-4. Texas A&M. And then you finish up with Ole Miss. I mean, very easily 5-5. I think it's a very fair to say that. I mean, that's a long drop from a national title to 5-5. Now, they can obviously do better than that, but that's a quick drop.
Are they going to Shreveport? Should we just call it right now? Are they going to Shreveport? Is it going to sleet on LSU all year?
That's your bit. And let me tell you what, you're playing the 3rd, the 10th, the 17th, 24th, 31st. I mean, you don't have a bye until before Alabama. There's not a lot of time to just rework things. There's also the possibility one of these games gets, I mean, the last thing you want is like the Missouri or Vanderbilt game to get delayed and pushed into the off week when you need to regroup. But this is it. This is why, I said at the beginning of this thing, be better if you just played SEC games. No, like in the NFL, someone goes 1-15 and you keep your fans when you go 1-15 because you're going to get to draft Joe Burrow. And then and then it switches. Mm-hmm. When you start going 1-9, you don't get good recruits. So that's why I think there will always be easy non-conference because they got to sell tons of tickets, keep excitement. And man, it'd be very, very, even a 6-4 or 7-3 season when you're coming off a national title is pretty disappointing, but you can't cushion it with, hey, we're actually a 10-3 team because we got some non-conference. So, right. Very tricky. One thing I wanted to think back on, 2008, I believe, was the epic 3-2 game.
Yeah, Auburn
versus Mississippi State.
Oh, that's really funny, Dan. That's a great point.
In 2008. So unless we have like an 11-year-old listening, and I hope we are, I hope we do. This is in the lifetime of pretty much every, I mean, I'm not going back to like the 50s here. Mississippi State played a football game that was 3-2. Now they've been throwing around a lot, obviously, for many years. But Mike Leach from that day where they ran it, they only ran 55 plays in that game. They threw it classic. 60 yesterday. 55 plays.
Threw it more times in total plays than the 3-2.
Yeah, the 3-2 epic Auburn Mississippi State game.
You want an overreaction? Here's an overreaction for you. Is LSU, is Ed Orgeron set up to be Gene Chizik 2.0? Chizik in 2010 has all the stars aligned. They get Cam Newton by some manner or another. They have one great season. They go undefeated. They win a national title. Cam leaves like Joe Burrow left, and also he loses his coordinators and a ton of other talent. And they went 8-5 the next year, got blown out 4 of the 5 losses. And then the year after that, the bottom completely fell out and Chizik was gone. Now, Orgeron has recruited so well that probably won't be the case. But I watched that LSU season last year, and it just reminded me a little bit of Chizik's season with Auburn, where it's just like everything went perfectly, and then after that, nothing went perfectly.
All right, that is an overreaction. Throwing him in Chizik is almost Larry Coker, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oof.
Let me say this much about Mike Leach and Mississippi State. When you take over a program, now, he comes in with a lot of, obviously a lot of gravitas and background.
Yeah, he's got the credibility.
Credibility. I mean, he's won a million games. But still, you're introducing yourself to a new area of the country and your offense and what exactly is that? Can this kind of gimmicky? Why wasn't he here earlier? I imagine the TV ratings, particularly in the South, were enormous for that game yesterday because it was like pent-up demand. Yeah. Everybody in the South is watching, and Mississippi State in his first game just walks in and says, I'm going to run this offense. How you like me now? Like it is the moment where I bet every single recruit in the South's head, they're not all going to go to Mississippi State. Not predicting they're going to all send it, but man, if you are like a wide receiver,
huh,
or you're like, you know, you're sitting there going, ooh, look how open that little rub route was. Like those little, ooh. And the question was always with Mike Leach is, could he get, what happens when he gets the great athletes? Now, he started getting some, Michael Crabtree, when he was at Texas Tech, but he was still recruiting a tough spot. Washington State, he got some, but you still, Mississippi State is not going to be, it's not going to beat Alabama and Georgia and those, but man, there are a lot of recruits within a couple hundred miles of that place. And there's a whole bunch of them that can run those kind of routes. And I got to figure in terms of just like statement, that was a monster for that program going forward. Because I don't know how, if you're an offensive player, you're not going, boy, that looks pretty fun.
Mississippi State has actually recruited really well since the end of the Mullen era. Because even Joe Moorhead, who was not a complete disaster, it wasn't like Joe Moorhead went 2-10 both years. Like his first 2 years, I believe, were either the best or a hair away from the best of like the first 2 years of any coach in school history. He was like, he was there. It's a pretty fascinating administrative decision by John Cohen, the AD there, because he basically said, we have good enough, and by Mississippi State's really, really poor standards of football for the last half century, they, like, Joe Moorhead was good enough. And they were like, nope, we don't want good enough after 2 years, and it was either a winning record or a 500 record, but two bowl appearances. They said, he said, sayonara, Joe, we are going to get, like, we tasted playoff contention. We tasted the number one ranking. We tasted that we are going to try to get someone else to bring us back there. Because that firing, now you had heard rumblings all year long, but it was still, you know, Joe Moorhead going was one of the more surprising moves. Even early last season, It was like, would he go to BC? Would he go to Rutgers? And then it quickly flipped to like, they don't really want him anymore. And so to bring in Mike Leach, and look, Mike Leach is not at USC, Texas, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, whatever. He's not at a Cadillac job because of Mike Leach. Not because of his offense, not because he's quirky. It's because twice a year he does or says really dumb things that put him in a spin cycle of controversy that more mainstream campuses probably wouldn't tolerate in the same way, right? So it's I wrote it yesterday for a column for Yahoo. Mike Leach has sort of niched himself to be the best bad job coach of this generation. And I'll count Bill Snyder as the last generation because he's probably the goat of bad job coaches, right? But like what Mike Leach has done is like he needs people who are desperate enough for him. And I don't want to say tolerate his act because I don't think it's an act. I just think he's like he just beats to his own drum. I mean, the Mike Leach stories are great. Like the offense and the defense, like sometimes like the staffs go in at different times during the day. I called Urban Meyer last night after because they'd done a bunch of air raid stuff on Fox, and he was laughing because he was like, yeah, when I got to the SEC, you know, the first year, everybody's like, oh, that spread won't work. The spread won't work. And well, it ended up working. And he laughed. He was like, well, the first four or five games of Florida, I didn't know if it was going to work either. It's interesting to look at Mike Leach because he has won and he's been innovative enough to really place himself. You just look at like the blind resume, like what he has done at impossible places. I mean, totally impossible places. Should have, like Mike Price did that at Washington State and he ended up with the Alabama job. Leach is like the most relentlessly fascinating football character of our time. Said, I'm happy to see him have success.
Here's one other thought on Mike Leach. Do you remember who was going to hire him 3 years ago until they fired the athletic director, like right when he was on the cusp of bringing him in? Does Sully remember who was about to hire Mike Leach?
Yeah, the meeting was between athletic director and Leach was probably about 10 minutes from my house in L.A. So, yes, I do remember.
Yes, yes. Tennessee was John Curry was going to hire Mike Leach. And then they got so sick of that coaching search, they fired Leach and brought in Phil Fulmer. And you got Jeremy Pruitt. And maybe Pruitt will still turn out. But he hadn't had a day yet at Tennessee like Mike Leach had in day one. Day one.
Hey, beat Indiana in a bowl game.
They did
Pat.
Beat Indiana in the
mighty
bowl
Indiana.
Game. And they beat a ranked Kentucky team once.
Longest group of five win streak. I don't care if it's fool's gold or not. I'm cashing it in, baby. We're running with it.
That was the Ritz and Marina Del Rey.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was the Ritz and Marina Del Rey. And I remember one of the people involved telling me that they actually just met in the lobby. Like, have you ever been to that Ritz and Marina Del Rey, guys? Like,
So they sat so in like a you just walk tables, in, it's like a couple coaches.
Yeah. Yeah. Like nobody recognized John Curry or Mike Leach. You know, it's Maria Del Rey. People got other stuff going on. You know, like
I once did.
There's no VolQuest posters anywhere about.
The last year of Steve Lavin at UCLA, his last season. Yeah. He's living. He lives. He may still live there. I don't know. In Marina Del Rey, and I'm doing a story on him. He's come over the house, and he's got, you know, it's like a condo townhouse thing. I mean, you know, beautiful area, but you get no room. So we're, for whatever reason, we're going to drive to UCLA, or I think, and I don't know, he's like, I got to take my garbage cans out. So he's out back, and the guy goes, hey, like his neighbor says hey to him or something like that. And he's just like, started asking him a couple questions, and he goes, who are you? And I'm like, I'm just here doing a story on him. He's like, you're doing a story on him? I'm like, yeah. And Steve Lavin says to his neighbor, he's like, yeah, I work up at UCLA. I'm the basketball coach. And he's like, the guy had no idea. He goes, like the head coach? He's like, yeah, like John Wooden? He's like, not like John Wooden, but yeah, same job. Yeah. Technically. And he had been the head coach like 4 years at UCLA. I'm like, nowhere else in America could the next door neighbor of the, I mean, I don't care what school you're at. Yeah. It's like you never even know who this guy is. Ever see him on TV? Just click. Nope, didn't matter. Marina Del Rey, don't care. I was like, this is killing me. So funny. And Lavin's like, that's going to be a great scene. Oh, that's good for my story here. Oh, boy.
And I'm sure that was your lead, wasn't it?
Sure. Absolutely.
Steve Lavin lost. I remember that. That was CBS Sports Line. Yeah, right. Dan? Was that CBS
Sports
Line? Back
in the CBS Sports Line days, dragging the garbage cans out, and this neighbor doesn't even know the hell he
is. Tremendous. Tremendous.
Yeah, that's Marina Del Rey for you. They got, hey, if you live there, you got a lot better stuff to do than worry about. UCLA Bruin basketball team, dude, enjoy life. But anyway, yeah, so yeah, I think that was just talk about statement wins. I mean, and yeah, you know, Leach had been up for a few jobs down there, and you know, all these coaches, the SEC, it just means SEC, can you do it at the big show, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
I never got that, like, because he did it with Kentucky, you know, like they created the air raid there in the 90s. Like,
yeah, but he wasn't the head coach. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I know he enjoyed it. I know he enjoyed it.
Leach was sort of, I appreciated this about Leach. Like, the SEC values itself like no other league. It sort of builds up its own mythology, right? And when Phil Longo got hired as Ole Miss's OC and people were like, can it work in the SEC? Leach just like mocked SEC superiority in an interview with the Clarion Ledger. He was just like hogwash. And then he was like, we did it at Kentucky. Like, you know, he was basically like, just because you have your own TV network doesn't mean you're like much better at football. The other thing is, and this is like where I got yelled at for writing about talking about football too much. LSU didn't score a touchdown in its first four drives and had like 26 total yards. And I really think one of the interesting parts of this Leach experiment is that he dove out west into the 3-3-5 defense tree. And LSU did figure it out. But like one of the things about the 3-3-5 is you don't see it. So it's like a funky zone in basketball or something. And that really stymied them. The same thing happened in North Carolina when they opened against Syracuse. And again, they figured it out. But they scored once on their first like eight drives or something. So something to watch too. You have this, obviously this quirky offensive system that's going to get all this attention, but you also have this unique defense, and Mississippi State is now the toughest team to prepare for schematically in the SEC because it's so different.
Well, that concludes this week in Mississippi State Bulldog football talk. I mean, God, that was the damn recruiting. We just gave Mike Leach his own recruiting bin here.
We're just going to have to move to Mississippi because during the week we announced that this was a Deion Sanders podcast and now it's a Mike Leach podcast.
So. Yeah, and the Lane train won't stay silent forever. So, yeah, Mississippi's where it's at. Stark Vegas. If you were to live in Mississippi, where would you live? What town would you live in?
Yeah. Memphis?
That's not in Mississippi. You'd be up there maybe
Gulfport Olive or Branch. Something. Get me down to the beach. Give me Gulfport.
Yeah, I want the Gulf, yeah.
Yeah,
I'd go golf. I don't know. All right. Anyway, other big result. Oklahoma just has Kansas State reeling. The Kansas State team that lost to Arkansas State, 21-point lead in the second half, and Oklahoma just implodes. Can't stop, block punt, and get any offense. Spencer Rattler throwing picks. And just like that, once again, the Oklahoma Sooners lose. It's the second straight year they lost to Kansas State. They lost to Iowa State famously a couple years ago. And the Big 12 is in a heap of trouble with that. We talked about this early on, these non-conference losses and the lack of good non-conference opponents, like bake in an inability survive a loss. Now, we predicted that weeks ago before we knew it was going to happen, but like you can turn around and go, well, who are you going to beat that's now impressive? Texas survived Texas Tech, which survived Houston Baptist. Now, that will probably be a wash at the end, but Oklahoma's very lucky Texas won that game. If they have any chance to get back. Oklahoma State has not looked great. Baylor finally got to play, but tough spot for the Big 12. But let's just talk Oklahoma. I mean, this is a devastating loss for that program that had high hopes and is trying to get beyond being the fourth playoff team and being a real playoff team. You know, another loss like that is just puzzling for the program.
Yeah. I mean, you want a little more overreaction for you? I mean, there's something wrong with Lincoln Riley's program. I can't say exactly what it is, but they shouldn't lose these games. You shouldn't lose 2 years in a row to Kansas State. You should not lose to Iowa State. You should not give up 60, even to a great LSU team, in a playoff game. There is something preventing them from being an elite program. And it's not recruiting, because if you look at the recruiting, man, they've got – somebody had a stat. I wish I could attribute it, but that Oklahoma had 50 four- and five-star players on their roster, and Kansas State had zero. So something is preventing them from playing up to their talent level. Obviously, the clear problem is the defense. Like, they're just not good, and they can change coordinators and they can change schemes, but they have been absolutely overmatched defensively for every year. This even goes back to the end of the Stoops era, you know, where they just got sucked into the Big 12, go, 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 throw, 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 don't stop anybody kind of mindset, and they have not gotten out of it successfully. So Lincoln Riley's a great coach, great offensive coach. His defenses aren't good enough, and they lose at least one game a year that you look at and say, what the hell's wrong with Oklahoma?
So I'm going to overreact in a different way. It's easy to blame the defense, the special teams, the block punt. I mean, there were a bunch of big plays in that game. The block punt was one. Obviously, they couldn't tackle. Lil Deuce was running wild for K-State. What a fun player he's going to be the next couple of years, the little 5'5" scat back. But if you are Lincoln Riley and you are winning by three touchdowns in the third quarter, this is how they finished the game. Drive chart. Fumble, punt, 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 interception. And the interception was sort of with 49 seconds left. And you are going up against a team that essentially was pulling guys off the bus and saying, hey, you're going to start at defensive back today.
Yeah.
Like, if you're Lincoln Riley and you have all this chaos going around, like in the middle of this game, you got to figure out a way to score on a drive in the fourth quarter. Because if you do that, you win the game. All right. Now, I don't know if they needed to run the ball a little bit more, which isn't one of his specialties. I was flipping around there in the second half, but it seemed like every time they had the ball, they were going, they were being aggressive. But like, you have to be able to exploit those searing mismatches and figure out a way to put together a drive and score a touchdown. Like, when they needed the offense to bail out the defense, which isn't an unusual thing there, the offense failed. Like, Lincoln Riley's offense failed him at the end of that game. And that's as much of a reason why they lost as the fact that they're still a sieve on defense. They can't tackle, and they made a huge special teams blunder. So that's my Oklahoma overreaction. But like Chris Klieman, like the dude won four national titles in 5 years at North Dakota State. Like, you can't fake four national titles at that 1AA level. That's really, really hard to do. And so give him credit. Like, he's an old ball coach. He knows how to win. And beating Oklahoma 2 years in a row is such a credibility thing. Like, in terms of, if you're at K-State, you're not going to beat Oklahoma and Texas for recruits, but you need to compete with that middle class in the Big 12. And they have shown they can emerge in the next few years to be in that upper middle class of the Big 12. And he obviously knows how to develop players.
Yeah, great win for him. Awesome. Yeah. But they still lost to Arkansas State, which, again, as Dan pointed out, this is the problem, is those losses are dragging down the entire conference.
You can't just sit there. Kleiman's awesome, and I think he's going to continue to do a great job at Kansas State, but there's that loss. But Arkansas State just rolls right into their place and beats them. So, you know, and they had, as you said, the COVID COVID issues. They took five buses and spread their kids out, like rode a bus to Oklahoma. I mean, this is like some old school stuff. And Oklahoma was dominating. To me, it's just different than when you're flat and the other team gets out to that early, like Arkansas yesterday against Georgia, right? Georgia's just a mess early. And Arkansas is hanging around and they're getting stops and they got the lead and all. And then eventually Georgia gets it together and rolls them. Even if Georgia hadn't come back, you just look and go, that's just a terrible day for Georgia. That would have been a mess. It's different when you're leading by 21. It has to be your offense that fails you at that point, because they're either not holding the ball and running out the clock, or they're not scoring even field goals or anything. So whatever adjustments went down, all of it. Klieman, a great win for Kansas State. I think it's their first road win against a top five opponent ever.
Wow.
You forget how bad they were all those years.
Bad for decades. I mean, and not just bad, but like horrible for decades, you know? So no, that, I mean, it's awesome for them, you know, kudos to them. They were missing a bunch of players, and for them to win the game and to come back, that shows some great character on their behalf. No doubt about it. But that league, I think I put that league behind the AAC right now in terms of if you're doing a conference pecking order, and we don't have that many conferences playing yet, but obviously you're going to put the SEC, ACC, and then I put the AAC above the Big 12 right now.
I certainly think there's a better path to a title right now, to the playoff, for UCF and Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Like, you can see a pretty nice little path, that, you know, one of those teams than otherwise. All right, let's talk quickly about Texas, because that was an unbelievable game.
Oh, my gosh.
They are trailing 56-41 to Texas Tech. I thought it was great. Patrick Mahomes apparently did not have any meat. He was just on Twitter chirping nonstop. This is phenomenal. Patrick Mahomes did beat Texas. It was basically the only good win they ever had while he was there. It's still astounding. When I did a epic athlete book, the kids books I write on that, I went through every game of Patrick Mahomes' college career. Yeah. You could write a real book on how the hell they screwed this up. I mean, you had Patrick Mahomes and you did nothing. You beat Texas, a bad Texas team, on Thanksgiving once. Like, that was it. It was awful. It's unbelievable. And now Cliff Kingsbury is actually a good NFL coach. None of this makes sense. Zero. Well, if you were looking at that program, you would not say, well, one of these guys is actually going to do a pretty, he's turned into a successful NFL coach, and one's the greatest player in the game. Jeez. All right, anyway. That's an aside.
Kingsbury always needed a GM to be like, hey, Cliff, half the guys have to play defense too. Right. Maybe that's really what, like,
your recruiting class cannot have 11 wide receivers. I mean, they were giving up. They gave up like 70 points to people. I mean, it was just,
it was atrocious. Hell,
even Mahomes couldn't score enough points.
No.
It's honestly, if you're truly bored and you're a college football nerd like we are, just go back through their media guide. You can get online and go look at these things. And there's even quotes from the, I thought our offense did all right. Defense got a short.
We gave up 60 again.
Epic 3-year run. They also had Baker Mayfield and the Davis guy who's played in the NFL. Yeah.
Davis Webb.
I mean, he was loaded at QB. But anyway, that's an aside. They almost won yesterday. They're leading 56-41 with 3:13 to go. And then Texas just credit them. I thought they were done. This is not. Gritty Texas isn't really what you think of anymore.
No.
But this was gritty. We're not gonna Ellinger is just like, I ain't losing yet. And they scored twice, 2:39 and 40 seconds. Ellinger ends up with four TDs. Texas wins 63-56 and very well may have saved Herman's job. I mean, I don't know. Tom Herman's job. Like, if that ball goes the wrong way early, I don't know. But that was almost...
They don't get the onside kick.
They almost a horrible, horrible loss to a at least fun victory. Pete?
Yeah, I can't say I was like locked in on that game as it was going on, because it seemed like Texas was kind of in control. And then all of a sudden it wasn't and everything backslid. But it's dispiriting for Texas, where you've heard like, we have all these great new assistant coaches, new coordinators, new schemes. We're going to be four down instead of three. We're going to be harder to... Like, there's just like... 8 months of rhetoric come to a screeching halt there. And I tip my cap to Sam Ehlinger. Like, in the quintessential Big 12 game, they won in the quintessential Big 12 way. Like, just complete chaos. 15 points. They had to get that two-point conversion. They got the penalty. They had to throw over the top on the tying touchdown. Ehlinger is one of the best quarterbacks in all college football. He showed that in spades. Composure, poise, et cetera, were awesome to see. And it will be interesting. We're overreacting to it now, and it was a bloody mess of a win for Texas. Like, if all of a sudden in 3 weeks Texas figures some things out, can slow some people down, and is like 4-5-0, or you know, I saw Joel Klatt put him in his top 10 yesterday. Pat, did you put Texas in your top 10?
Hell no.
I didn't think so. Yeah, sometimes Fox employees are wed to Fox, have business partners. But I was sort of like, oh, people are going to put Texas in the top 10?
No,
like,
they
didn't look like it to me. Yeah. So what's interesting there, Dan, and you brought this up earlier, is now the Big 12 is in a spin cycle of defeatism, because where are the good wins? You made a great point about the AAC. They scheduled it smart. Cincinnati and UCF play each other in late November. If they're undefeated, that's a top 10 matchup. So you can all of a sudden beat a top 10 team and maybe make a push as everyone else is beating themselves up. The Big 12 is just going to beat itself up, and now, like, a true there is no marquee top 10 win on the board.
No, there's not. I mean, the best thing the Big 12 can hope for is Texas wins, keeps winning, beats Oklahoma and looks good doing it. Oklahoma State keeps winning, and those two play, I think it's in late October, might even be Halloween, and maybe October 24th. And they're both undefeated, and that's a high-level game. But you are asking for a lot to go right, I think, for that to even matter. You know, I just think that league is very much behind the eight ball. As far as the Texas comeback, and it was, I mean, look, Ehlinger, you're right. I mean, man, did he make some heroic plays, and just, you know, he's a winner. There's no doubt about that. But the things, Texas Tech special teams enabled this in an incredible way. I mean, they get up 15 points, and what does Matt Wells do? Says, let's pooch the kickoff. They hit it 24 yards, and Texas gets the ball at their own 41. So you've right there, you've given them at least two plays worth of field position. So they then bing, 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 they score, and then they do not cover the onside kick worth a darn. So I don't know whether they were surprised by it. If they were, I don't know why. But then Texas recovers that and rolls on down the field, and they score in the end, get the two-pointer. And at that point, you know what's going to happen. You know that game is over in overtime. So it was a heck of a comeback for Texas, but Texas Tech definitely enabled it.
You know who Ehlinger's got a little of in him is a little Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, he is not like this just pure passer that like takes your breath away like Mahomes and some others did when they were Trevor Lawrence does like when they were in college. He's got kind of that stocky build. Like, I always thought Dak was like top heavy, which gave him some, you know, some leverage in the run game. And, you know, there's a character element. Like, I've been around both of them like a decent amount in college. I just like, I feel like personality wise, they're similar, and like they have no problem willing their teams to victory. So he would be my NFL cop.
Yeah, like not a classic runner, but he can run.
Yeah.
It's like Dak's not a runner, but try tackling him, you know, and yeah.
Yes. He's not niched as a runner or a thrower, but like very high echelon at both, just not from the paradigm. Like when I think of a running quarterback, I think of Randall Cunningham,
right.
You know what I mean? Like that kind of guy. So like, and he's not, you know, he's not a 4-5 burner or anything, but you know, like just gutsy enough to figure out a way to get it done. And that, he certainly got it done Saturday.
All right. They like handing out the trophy in New York at the end of the year. We like doing it every week because we like to overreact. So who is a small sample Heisman winners this week?
Hello, record book.
Hello, small sample Heisman.
How about that?
Pat, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I'm ready. And I love this one. This guy, what ended an incredibly entertaining game between Louisiana and Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
The last three scoring plays of this game were incredible. Georgia Southern is down 17-10. They're driving, throw it in the end zone. Receiver makes a one-handed catch with two guys on him, pulls it in. I mean, as good a catch as you saw all day. So they're down 17-16. They go for two. Shea Wirtz, who's been the quarterback there for like 7 years, gets in trouble, gets almost sacked, spins out of it, and on the run throws across his body for the two-point conversion. They're up 18-17. Georgia Southern's going to beat Louisiana, which has kind of been the darling of the season so far because of the upset of Iowa State. But no! Louisiana has just enough time to drive down and get into what would theoretically be field goal position, but their kicker's no good. And that's why Nate Snyder is my Sol Sample Heisman winner, the kicker for them. On the year, he was 2-for-6 kicking field goals going into that play. He had missed from 34 yards in the game. They sent him out there, yeah, go win the game from 53, buddy. Go ahead, you got this. And he does. He nails it. Incredible, incredible clutch kick by Nate Snyder. Small Sample Heisman winner, the king of Lafayette, Louisiana. You're the man.
I'm gonna piggyback off Pat for a minute before I give mine. Shea Wirtz, who has been the quarterback of Georgia Southern for a decade, recall his arrest last August for cocaine possession when it was actually bird poop on his car. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. That was a terrible arrest. Yeah, that was outrageous.
Terrible.
Outrageous.
Like terrible. That two-point conversion that he made, his hand touched the ground 3 different times to keep him up. He spun around, touched it twice, stumbled, touched it again, got up, and, like, zinged the ball in. So that was probably as fun of a finish as you would see all day. And those couple plays were incredible. I am going to go a little more conventional and boring for my small sample Heisman. I am going to give it to Kyle Pitts, the tight end at Florida. 8 catches, 170 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean, how many tight ends do you see have 4 touchdowns? Yeah. Even the guy Dan predicted from LSU didn't get. He did get one, but he didn't get his. Didn't get.
Did I say
3?
Yeah. Well, almost.
Yeah, you said 3.
We're on
that's
our
okay.
Way.
We made our
way.
We made our listeners aware, and that's the important thing. But like Dan Mullen, you could just tell, had a field day calling plays. You think the old Mississippi State coach didn't love going into Oxford and hanging 51 on Lane Kiffin? You don't those Mississippi rivalries don't die easily when you switch jobs.
No.
So old Dan calling plays and hanging 51 with Kyle Trask threw for 416. But man, Kyle Pitts, have yourself a day. He is regarded by NFL evaluators as the best tight end in college football. And nothing that has transpired so far this season would make anyone believe anything different.
It's one of those quirky, you know, conferences are too big. What exactly is a conference? That was Florida's first trip to Oxford since 2007.
Yeah. Jeez. Since the great Tim Tebow promise game,
yeah,
right?
Right. It's like this is what we call a you know, you haven't been there. And so Tim Tebow was 2 sports ago. All right. Mine goes to Dylan Gabriel of UCF, quarterback, star quarterback. 4 touchdowns, 408 yards against East Carolina. I know it's East Carolina, but he took a massive hit, went down, looked like he was going to be out of the game, got up and promptly completed 20 of 22 passes, including 18 consecutive. Absolutely torched ECU. Again, 408 yards, 4 touchdowns. UCF looks really good. I know ECU is not that good, but we saw all sorts of teams struggle this weekend. If you win a game this year, you won the game, because there is no well-oiled machine in college football. But if there is one, it might be Central Florida. So he is my small sample Heisman. All right. We say many, many mean things on this podcast, many unfair things, many overreact. I think we fired Ed Orgeron today.
fired Ed Orgeron and Lincoln Riley.
Ed Orgeron and Lincoln Riley have now been fired by us. We are very, very reasonable people, obviously. No, we are not. We're horrible people. We're a bunch of jerks. But this segment, we will try to be nice. And I'm going to start with you, Pete Thamel. Say something nice.
Skippy, all I don't right. got anything.
Pat
Give me a minute.
40, say see, something it's nice while Pete tries to think of nice. Something.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas, it just flows off my tongue, the niceties. So I'm going to say something nice about Justin Fuente and Virginia Tech. This was a team that they have not even been able to play a game yet. And they're finally going to play North Carolina State. And Fuente, early in the week, is like, well, we hope we're going to play. And right then you're like, oh boy, how bad is the virus situation there? Turns out it was pretty darn bad. They got to the game, but they had 23 players out, four staff members. Their first-time defensive coordinator, Justin Hamilton, could not call plays. The guy who would be his logical successor, Tracy Clays, he couldn't come to the game either. So you're down to basically your third-string defensive coordinator and 23 players out, and you're playing a league game against North Carolina State, and you roll them. Absolutely dominated the game. Beat North Carolina State by three touchdowns. They scored, I think, their first three possessions. Averaged 8.5 yards per play. 193 passer rating using two guys. Ran for 7.7 yards per carry. I mean, that was a really impressive performance with a skeleton crew. You take 23 out of, you know, I don't know whether it was out of 105 or what the total is, but not a lot of coaches are going to feel very good going into a game in that situation. And they know, don't just win, they blow out their opponents. So congratulations to the Hokies.
I'm going to say something nice about the Ponies from SMU. We've talked a lot on the podcast about Cincinnati. Pat went to their game against Army yesterday. We've talked a lot about UCF as deserved. But very quietly, SMU should be ranked. All our AP voters who've already logged their things. I would be disappointed if they weren't ranked. They beat Texas State in kind of a slog of an opener, hung 65 on North Texas, scored 50 against Stephen F. Austin. It's Shane Buechel, the Texas quarterback. They have a ridiculous amount of skill. Fun little game. Memphis goes to SMU on Saturday. Number 17, Memphis. Let's hope there's a number hanging by SMU for that game. And I'm going to predict right now that SMU pulls the upset. So props to Sonny Dykes. Props to Sam Buechel. It's fun to have SMU back with a little juice in college football and rolling a little bit. So if for nothing else, maybe they can get a money bag on the sideline. I can't believe we didn't talk about Lane Kiffin having the money bag prop on the sideline.
I was not going
to
let that
go. Yeah, we need to retape the podcast.
I was not going to let that go. First off,
thank God.
If SMU and TCU can both get popping at once, I just think that would be phenomenal in the Metroplex.
Yeah, the Metroplex would be fun.
Because that is college football central. And but it's always people coming in, you know. But if you get those two adding that go. But anyway, yeah, I'm going with Ole Miss. First off, two things about Ole Miss. I'm going to say something nice. Those blue uniforms were sweet.
Yeah, they were awesome.
Absolutely sweet color scheme. Ton of respect for them taking the knee with Florida Unity. I thought it was a nice gesture in a place where, you know, that symbolism is something. It was respectful and all that. But then they cap it off when A.J. Finley, defensive back, makes an interception, gets over the sideline, and he has a choice between the turnover chain or the newly minted turnover bag. If you haven't seen this, just type in Ole Miss money bag, which the fact it's, again, talk about history. Symbolism in history is not... It looks like a potato.
Mike Slive rolled over his grave when those gifts started getting retweeted around the internet.
Phenomenal. It looks like a potato sack, like one of those old potato sack races. And someone just kind of drew a money symbol. It's not even a nice bag. Like, you know, like Pulp Fiction or the, you know, the mob movies, they have a nice, or The Wire, they come in with a nice
You don't really want to use a Versace valise or anything.
Yeah,
can't put that up from like the grounds crew walking into the stadium. Yeah. You know,
it's like something you put your leaves in and leave on the curb instead of just a nice briefcase with two. Anyway, he gets it and he's got the money bag. They asked Kiffin in, say he's called it the turnover bag. He didn't think he was smarting. We need further replication.
Yeah, that's how you turn your roster over in the SEC.
Just the symbolism.
Go get some D linemen, Lane.
Listen, I mean, I'm not saying we're going to pay you to come here, but we have a damn money. We have money bags available. There are bags that symbolize we would put what is in the bag, too. What is in the bag? Something is in that bag. If you look at it,
yeah,
it's the greatest mystery since that tarp they had in that old field at Baylor. What's under the tarp?
Yeah, what's under the tarp?
It's like bodies under there. What is under the tarp? What was that?
You're a good
stadium?
Investigative reporter, Dan. Get to Oxford and open the bag.
I want. What is in the bag? We never found. I think they destroyed that old stadium in Baylor. What was that thing? Carter Leon? Was it?
No, it was. Oh, geez.
Amos. What was the name? Amos Carter.
Was it McLean Stadium?
No, that's the new one.
Wasn't it? That's the new one? Okay. No, Amon Carter is TCU.
That's it. I forget. Yeah. Anyway, dead stadium down there in Baylor. I know he's wondering what's under the tarp. What are you hiding? Well, this is great. So congratulations, Ole Miss. You got housed, but everything else you did great. You did really good.
Floyd Casey Stadium. Floyd Casey Stadium.
That's it. Floyd Casey. Floyd Casey Stadium. Yeah. You did everything great except play football. But, hey, I'm going to say something nice about that. All right. Subscribe. Spread us on social media. Tell your friends. And appreciate you tuning in. Look, you're not going to do the season right unless you are here every single Monday. Every single Monday. The Overreaction Monday is the best. And we're having a good time. Our listenership is up, even though we haven't had everybody playing. I assume we're going to do great now, even more so. So don't miss a single bit of the antics. And we'll be back midweek to look forward to week 5 as the season churns up. We're rolling along. Talk to y'all later.